Hello, everybody. Roger Stone, a longtime Republican strategist and an advisor to Donald Trump, who was arrested Friday on charges related to the Russia collusion probe, is freed on bail. His arrest came following an indictment by special counsel Robert Mueller. Stone's indictment contained 7 counts, 1 count of obstructing an official proceeding, 5 counts of false statements, and 1 count of witness tampering. Mueller's investigating Russia's possible interference in the 2016 election and Trump-Moscow collusion. With Stone's indictment, Mueller goes deep inside Trump's inner circle, charging a long-standing friend of Trump and one of the first people who promoted him for the White House. How important is that indictment, and what does it mean for President Trump and the collusion probe? Is Mueller tightening the noose on him? These are some of the questions that we'll be asking in tonight's debate. But before that, let's go to Washington, D.C., where Press TV's correspondent Colin Campbell is standing by to share with us his thoughts over Roger Stone's arrest. Colin?
Yeah, this was somewhat unexpected on a day like today, when Mueller's investigation doesn't seem to be winding down, even though there have been queries as to when it was going to wind down from since last year. Many people have theorized that it would only be a matter of days or weeks before it finally concluded, but it looks like there are still more revelations happening in the investigation of the Trump administration, and mainly the president himself, Donald Trump. Now, of course, Stone has denied all of the allegations against him, saying that there is no collusion, that he really was just, this might have been something that is more of a misunderstanding than anything. And of course, the White House is denying that whatever Stone is being questioned over has to do with implications directly connected to the president. They're saying this is just an individual who may have lied about particulars in the case, but nothing that is connected to the president himself. So we have to wait and see what happens with this investigation. What are the charges that are most likely to apply to Stone? Are these all going to stick, or is it just a select few that will actually be as substantive enough to actually sentence Stone, if that is what is going to happen in the long term? Meanwhile, the president is planning for a conference later today. It's unclear if he's going to answer to the allegations that are surrounding Stone. Many people believe that it has to do with the government shutdown that we're experiencing right now and when people are going to get back to work. But you have to imagine that reporters at the White House right now, who are preparing for a Rose Garden address, are going to be asking the president whether or not Stone has been trying to deflect a lot of the allegations against the president as well.
All right, thanks a lot, Colin. That was Press TV's Washington correspondent, Colin Campbell. And joining us on tonight's debate, we've got author and journalist Mr. Craig Unger joining us from New York. Sir, welcome to the program. Well, a lot of twists and turns in this collusion case. As we know, the longtime Trump advisor, Roger Stone, has been charged by special counsel Robert Mueller. That indictment included evidence purporting that Stone had advanced knowledge of WikiLeaks' plans to divulge thousands of the hacked Democratic Party emails. Give us your views on this latest development.
Well, I think it's extremely important. This had been expected for some time. But if you read Mueller's indictment, the specificity is just amazing, because you see him quoting actual emails back and forth in which Roger Stone is communicating largely indirectly with a person who pretty clearly is Julian Assange. And he's talking about Organization One, which is WikiLeaks, and when are they going to release various emails, and should they postpone it, how much impact will they have. And if this isn't collusion, I don't know what is. It also seems to implicate another individual who's not named, but appears to be Steve Bannon, who, of course, was very, very close to Donald Trump. So if we want to know whether Trump actually had knowledge of this, I think that's going to be a key place to look in the future.
Also joining us now for tonight's panel is political analyst Mr. James Fetzer, who's with us now from Madison. Sir, welcome to the program. Well, the indictment suggests that Mr. Trump's campaign knew about the additional stolen emails before they were released, and they asked Mr. Stone to find out about them. After that, the Trump campaign sought more of those emails. What does this spell for President Trump at this point? Mr. Fetzer?
Well, this whole event is a political theater. Robert Mueller has come up dry with regard to the Russian investigation, and for good reason. There are three tells here. One is having a raid with armed officers on Roger Stone's home to apprehend his computers and his records for a nonviolent offense, and then releasing him on a $250,000 recognizance bond. That's theatrical. Second, CNN producer has acknowledged he was waiting at Roger Stone's home an hour before the arrest took place, so he was tipped off because this was a public relations stunt. Third, none of these indictments against Roger Stone have anything to do with Russian hacking. In fact, every serious student knows this was a fabrication where Robbie Moak and John Podesta introduced the Russian hacking meme within 48 hours of Hillary's concession speech for at least three reasons: to excuse their incompetent campaign, where even Michael Moore had predicted they would lose because they were neglecting the Rust voters in the Rust Belt states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which proved to be correct. Second, because they wanted to divert attention from the contents of the WikiLeaks emails, which led directly to Pizzagate, where John Podesta himself is a pedophile in chief. And third, to distract from Hillary Clinton's own entanglements with Russia, where, with the approval of Barack Obama, she sold off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves to Russia for a $145 million contribution to the Clinton Foundation. If Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were given the electric chair for sharing atomic secrets with the then Soviet Union, what do Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama deserve for selling off 20% of U.S. uranium to Russia?
Mr. Unger, our guest in Madison just painted quite a convoluted picture. What do you have to say about those comments?
It's silly conspiratorial nonsense that doesn't deal with any of the realities in the Mueller indictment. Look at the specifics. I mean, he is quoting from emails and text messages. And believe me, Robert Mueller has those authenticated, or he wouldn't put them in an indictment. And a court will decide. But I mean, if you just read through the indictment, which is out there publicly available, it is very, very compelling. And what you see is a relationship. Roger Stone and Trump go way, way back, nearly 40 years. And it all ties to Russia. If you go back to 1987, when Donald Trump took his first trip to Moscow, he immediately came back and he met with Roger Stone, among other people, and he took out a full-page ad in the New York Times, Washington Post, Boston Globe, under Stone's tutelage, and it put forth, this was his first run for president in 1988, and he put out a full-page ad that essentially put forth a policy that, in terms of American interest, was absolutely insane. It attacked NATO and the Western alliance mercilessly. This was still during the Cold War, and yet you have Donald Trump putting forth a very, very pro-Russian policy under Stone's tutelage. And it really raises the question of, was Trump turned, as was he recruited as an agent back then in the 80s?
Mr. Fetzer, our guest in New York, says that the tangible realities can't be ignored. If this indictment is valid, it's definitely packed with details that will make the Trump inner circle sweat, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is, we'll have to see
Professor
what happens
Fetzer.
Next.
Well, the whole thing is contrived and fabricated, involving corrupt members of the FBI, the Department of Justice, Hillary Clinton, and the DNC. Perhaps your guest didn't get the memo, but Christopher Steele, who was the author of the so-called Russia dossier, about 2 weeks ago, left the judge astonished in a UK courtroom when, under oath, he testified that he had written that as an employee of Hillary Clinton, We know it was Seth Rich, who was the IT guy for the DNC, a Bernie Sanders supporter, disillusioned by the way in which Debbie Wasserman Schultz was sabotaging the campaign of Bernie Sanders, who downloaded the files directly with the assistance of Kim.com, a well-known internet personality. They were conveyed to Julian Assange by way of Craig Murray, UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, where Julian Assange proceeded to publish them. We know this is the case, and indeed it appears that John Podesta wanted to set an example of someone who was a leaker and was responsible for having Seth Rich shot, where both Julian Assange and Keith Murray have observed repeatedly they know the leaker, that he was not Russian, and where after the shooting, Julian Assange offered a $20,000 reward for assistance in finding out the tracking down the who upset Rich. I'm sorry to say the propaganda campaign has endured for 2.5 years now. It has no foundation. The best cybersecurity experts in the world, including Bill Binney, have confirmed that the download of the files took place in the Eastern time zone at a rate far too fast to be Russian hacking. I have featured Bill Binney on my own radio show where he confirmed it to me directly. This is outrageous. And if they pour through the emails of Roger Stone, they'll find hundreds of correspondence between me and Roger, because Roger is a friend of mine. And just as Roger will not bear false witness against Donald Trump, I will not bear false witness against Roger Stone.
Mr. Unger, you were laughing there. Do you disagree with Mr. Fetzer?
To be honest, I can't figure out what he's trying to say. He's throwing in one irrelevancy after another. The indictment speaks for itself. I mean, here you have a sequence of events in which, you know, DNC, the DNC is hacked. They're repeated requests from Trump campaign officials, can we get more? Roger Stone reaches out to Julian Assange directly and indirectly, and it happens again and again. Those weren't fabricated. You really believe they're fabricated? Believe me, Robert Mueller isn't going to court with fabricated email and text. Those exist.
Mr. Fetzer, with the U.S. president mired in this deadlock over the government shutdown, what else could these allegations amount to? Do you think that the top Democrats are going all the way and will be aiming for Trump's resignation or his impeachment?
Well, there's nothing to the Russia hoax. There's a brilliant book which I recommend, unlike Mr. Unger's nonsense, entitled The Russia Hoax, where Greg Jarrett has thoroughly documented the complicity of the elements within the Department of Justice and the FBI who colluded corruptly with Hillary Clinton and the DNC to fabricate this elaborate scam, this scheme about which we've heard unrelenting reports for 2.5 years. I'm sorry to say there are individuals who are seeking to benefit financially from all of this political malfeasance, including your other guest. Vladimir Putin is an honorable man. There's nothing to the Russian hoax, even the claim that there was a discussion between Manafort and Russians about the polls was misinformation because he was discussing that with the Ukrainians where he was doing business. This whole thing is a massive fabrication to undermine the legitimacy of the Clinton Foundation, where we even have Donna Brazile speaking about Nancy Pelosi as speaker today but president tomorrow, where they seem to have a covert scheme to take Trump and Pence out of office to get Pelosi into the presidency, where she'd then make Hillary Clinton her vice president and resign. But it's all nonsense, it's all fabrication, and any serious student who's been following this knows that what you're hearing from Mueller is and from Unger is a fabrication and a fake. It's one of the great frauds on the American people. I would put it right up there with the claim that Lee Oswald was the lone shooter of JFK, or that 19 Islamic terrorists hit the United States. We know a great deal about JFK Lyndon Johnson was deeply complicit with the CIA, Texas Oilmen, and the Joint Chiefs to take out Jack Kennedy. And we know that 9/11 was brought to us compliments to the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad to get the United States embroiled in the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that serve as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. The American people deserve the truth, but the CIA began infiltrating the media in the 1950s in Operation Mockingbird. By 1975, William Bowlby, then its director, was already testifying to Congress that the agency owned everyone of any significance in the media. That was followed by Carl Bernstein's article in Rolling Stone in 1977, the CIA and the media, where high officials of the agency were boasting that their greatest successes had been with Time Lock, the New York Times, and CBS. Today, the situation is much worse. We're getting unrelenting reports of fake news 24/7. The cable CNN and MSNBC are by far the worst. A recent study has shown that, in fact, 90% of the reporting about the Trump administration has been negative. Only Fox came out with a reasonable proportion of 52% negative, 48% positive, which is much closer to the truth. If Donald Trump had done no more than expose the fake media and its massive influence on the American public and the formation of their attitudes, he would be regarded appropriately as a great champion of the public interest of the United States.
Mr. Unger, it's definitely tough to follow all that up. What's your response to our guest in Madison?
My response is this, is essentially your guest has no specific information that refutes any of the allegations in Mueller's report. He just says they're fabricated and then spouts 10 or 15 other very weird conspiracies that, I think he's just spouting them off the top of his head. My book has over 1,000 footnotes. You can go to the original sources if you want to check it out. But this is, I believe very strongly that we have a Russian asset in the White House. And there was not merely Russian meddling in the election. This was an attack on American sovereignty that was successful. And it was an intelligence operation done by the Russians in collusion, we can now see through these indictments, in the Mueller indictments of Roger Stone, and they went back and forth with Russia, saying Russia had hacked Hillary's emails, had hacked DNC emails, and it was, when are you going to release them? And they did release them. And it did play a role in the election, and it helped win it for Donald Trump.
Mr. Fetzer, Mr. Unger believes that he not only disagrees with you, but he believes that there is, as far as a Russian asset in the White House. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's completely absurd, for crying out loud. John Bolton and Mike Pompeo were hardly Russian assets. In fact, the chief executive of Google testified to Congress that the total sum Russia spent on the election in its attempts to influence was $4,750, less than $5,000. That's the amount of money corporate executives spent on an elaborate lunch for their high-ranking officers. This is ridiculous beyond belief. The deep state propaganda apparatus is very much at work. I'm sorry to say, but this man, or Unger, is very much a part of it. He's propagating a false narrative. He knows it's false. It's a deliberate effort to subvert the legitimacy of the people the American public elected to be president of the United States. Studies by Boston University and the University of Minnesota revealed that the reason Trump prevailed over Clinton was that the voters in rural counties in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which had suffered many casualties from the war in the Middle East, judged him, not with certainty, but to be less likely than the other candidate to continue those wars. He promised to get us out. Now he's starting to do it. He's pulling us out of Syria. He's reducing our forces in Afghanistan. The deep state and the military-industrial complex is going bananas. The Democratic Party is so tied into all of this corruption, they're going with it, and many of their propaganda outlets are right there pitching in. Sorry to say, but the guest you have with me here today is part and parcel of that effort to undermine the democratically elected president of the United States in order to preserve the interests of the deep state, where he is going about doing his best to drain the swamp on behalf of the American people, and I wish him well.
Mr. Unger, let's get a little bit of focus on this Mueller report as well, and let's talk about the impact of it. Impeachment, that's the thing that's the most dangerous to Donald Trump, and the Mueller report is deeply damning, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think the Democrats are actually somewhat reluctant to go full steam ahead with impeachment. They may be forced into it as the revelations come forth. I mean, I think the next step may be, will Donald Trump Jr. be indicted? Will Jared Kushner be indicted? And if it gets to Donald Trump's family, I think we're going to see things ratcheted up enormously. As it is here, I'm here in New York, and LaGuardia Airport is at least partially shut down. Incoming flights are not allowed. That is tremendously costly. That's a government shutdown that Donald Trump, your other guest hero, has instigated, and it's costing the city hundreds of millions of dollars a day. Now, as those costs proliferate, I think you're going to see things ramp up. And Mitch McConnell's going to be in a position where he's going to either have to cave in and reopen the government, or otherwise Donald Trump is going to seize emergency powers. So the entire crisis is going to be ratcheted up a notch at a time, and sure, we'll see how Trump comes forth. But I think in the end, a lot of Republicans who stood by him forever are going to see that once the economy is affected the way it already is being affected, and we just see it in the stock market, that their electoral future will be in doubt, and maybe they won't stand so solidly behind Donald Trump anymore.
And that's all the time we have for tonight. Allow me to thank my guest, political analyst James Fetzer, joining us from Madison, and also author and journalist Craig Unger joining us from New York. And a special thanks to you, our viewers, for staying with us tonight. Stay tuned. We've got plenty more to come here on Press TV. And join us again, same time, same place, tomorrow for another edition of The Debate. It's good night.